Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think of chess, do you think of high fashion, the Apollo missions, climate change, the Boy Scouts, and chess cops? Well, maybe you should. I'll tell you why on this edition of Profiles.
Welcome to Profiles. From entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs, Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Amy Mark Scores with you, and we're going to talk a little chess today. I've got Shannon Bailey, the World Chess Hall of Fame Chief Curator, and Tony Rich, the St. Louis Chess Club Executive Director, joining me to talk all things chess. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Well, I got to be honest. I think chess might be one of those worlds where you either know about it or you don't. You're either in the inside or you're the outside. Some people may not be aware that we have the World Chess Hall of Fame right here in St. Louis, and that the center of the chess world, even according to Garry Kasparov, the famous world chess champion, is right here in St. Louis. So what is the Chess World Hall of Fame and the St. Louis Chess Club, and what makes them so significant?
Sure. The Chess Club and the World Chess Hall of Fame are sister organizations. We're both nonprofits here in St. Louis. And the ultimate goal really is to promote chess. I like to say that the Hall of Fame teaches you why you should play chess, and the Chess Club teaches you how you should play chess. So the campus itself is the club and the Hall of Fame. On the club side, we have classes and tournaments and lectures and special events. We have grandmasters like Garry Kasparov, who you mentioned. So we have really all of the nuts and bolts necessary, whether you're your young student plays chess, or you're a grown adult who enjoys the game too.
And some people may recognize the giant chess piece. Yes. And that is the marker. That's the X marks the spot for the Chess Hall of Fame.
It's 20 feet tall, and it's like 10,000 pounds. It's gorgeous.
Wow.
So it's made out of this really heavy African wood, and it's really gorgeous. So it's one of those things where people often say, like, that giant chess piece.
Yeah, and it's like right by the Starbucks.
That's right.
There's the Starbucks in the Central West End and that giant chess piece.
Exactly. And you see people out there taking photos in front of it all the time, non-chess players. You'll see bridal showers, wedding parties will be out there, in the full gown and everything, right in front of the giant chess piece.
Somebody saw a couple weeks ago somebody proposing in front of it.
So it's become one of those Instagrammable spots. You have the Grand Canyon and you have the giant chess piece.
That's right.
And you can go to either one, but the chess piece is right here, so it's easy to get to.
Yes.
I grew up playing sports, ice hockey, tennis, soccer, and it always felt like there was this dichotomy between the kids who played sports and the kids who played chess. And I think there are stereotypes of chess being unsporty, but at the same time, the most universal metaphor in sports, football, hockey, whatever, is that, oh, this is a chess match.
They're in the end game now.
They're in the end game now. You're using chess terminology. And, I was not really familiar at all with the world of chess until I saw a documentary on Magnus Carlsen, and it captivated me. It was so engaging, and I realized I had the wrong perception of chess. It's something of a blood sport, and I didn't realize that. And Magnus drew me in because he's this young, cool kid from Norway. Is it Norway?
Yep.
This young, cool kid, and he is the Mozart of chess. He plays artfully, instinctively. He plays with guts. And that documentary opened up a whole new world for me. And I'm sure you guys see this a lot. You meet people who have preconceived ideas of what chess is, and you say, no, it's actually challenging and exciting and subversive, and chess is cool.
It's funny. If you go into any of the classrooms where we teach chess, probably 100 schools in the St. Louis area right now, you'll notice that the kids who play chess are no different than the rest of the kids. In fact, the kids who play chess are very often the kids who are on the football teams, that are on the baseball teams, and all the other sports as well. So Gata Kamsky is a chess player, an American chess player. He played for the world championship at one time. And he was asked the same kind of question is, you know, isn't chess just for the elite, for the dorks, for the old people, like all these stereotypes that kind of are associated with chess? And he said, you know, chess is all of these things. It's a science. It's a sport. It's an art. You know, whenever I play a game of chess, I try to make it beautiful. I try to make the pieces harmonize. I try to make the game beautiful. Whenever I'm preparing for that game, I'm looking up my opponent's lines and openings and ideas that they play and looking for any weaknesses in their armor. So it's very much this scientific approach, too. And he said, and when I'm sitting at the board, I'm very practical. I try to make psychologically challenging moves for my opponent. And in that aspect, it's very much a sport. One of us has to win this game.
Right.
And so, you know, yes, chess does have a little bit of that dorky, science-y kind of a mental aspect to it. But it has every bit as much a physical sport aspect to it also. You know, they wear heart monitors sometimes in these chess tournaments. And you'll see chess players just before they're winning or just before they're losing, their heart rate will spike up like they're running a marathon.
You know, at the World Chess Hall of Fame, a lot of us don't have the same chess backgrounds that a lot of the people do at the chess club. And so some of us are coming at it as like an artistic approach or just a general learning. And so I always kind of say that like my job is to make chess fun and accessible to everybody. And I can second that Magnus documentary because I was watching it, you know, for research at work. And I thought, I'll just watch 20 minutes a day. I'm not going to sit down and watch the whole documentary. And I watched the first 20 minutes and I thought, I have to watch the next 20
minutes. Can't stop now.
I couldn't. I watched it the whole way through. It is really good. And I think that there's a lot of movies out there now and a lot more information that's making chess seem more just part of the mainstream.
Absolutely.
I think one of the reasons why chess may seem so difficult or so the barrier to entry may seem so high is that you see these guys like Magnus and they play chess, like you said, like Mozart composed. I mean, he is the quintessential example of the best chess player maybe ever.
Right. Like, no one looks at Mozart and goes, I can do that.
Right. But the average coffee house player or club player like myself, you know, we're just as bad as everybody else at chess. We drop our pieces and make mistakes all the time. The great thing about the club is that there's a little bit of everything for folks. So if you want to be that serious chess player and you want to, you know, come in here and do your best and try to get the highest rating you can do that. But if you're like me and you're just a casual player, you do it as a socializing activity. You hang out with your friends and enjoy. You can do that, too. So that's the great thing about the game is all the facets, I would say.
We're going to talk more about the World Chess Hall of Fame when we get back, because the Chess Hall of Fame is not just chess. It's climate change and high fashion and Project Runway. That's next.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome back. I'm here with Shannon Bailey of the World Chess Hall of Fame. She is the chief curator for the Hall of Fame, and Tony Rich, the St. Louis Chess Club executive director. What exactly is in the World Chess Hall of Fame? Is it portraits and placards?
No.
And I will say, ladies and gentlemen, it is the coolest. I've been to the Chess World Hall of Fame now, and you guys have an exhibit from Project Runway's Michael Drummond.
Yes, and I'm going to go back one tiny piece about our history, because we opened up in 2011, in St. Louis, but the institution had been in existence for 20 years prior. And they focused, it was in Miami and D.C. and New York beforehand, and they focused solely on the game.
Okay.
You know, they inducted people into the Hall of Fame. They focused a lot, they would bring in school groups. It was when it was down in Miami, and they kept their exhibitions very static, and it was really just like historical looks at the game.
So these were the previous Chess Hall of Fames. Now, were there multiple at one time, or it was just moving locations?
It's always been the same thing. I mean, we started a new nonprofit when we moved it to St. Louis, but it just has moved around, but it's here to stay, obviously.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons why it came here was it was shut down for a couple of years. But when the chess club opened up in 2008, and I guess Tony can talk about that later, like it was just an explosion and all eyes were on St. Louis chess. So people that had been involved with the institution prior thought, you know, we've got to rebuild this museum and we've got to, and it should be in St. Louis. So I've been there since almost day one, and I've been involved with almost all of the cultural programming. And my background is in art history and museum studies and history, and so is a lot of the staff. And then, so we kind of look at the game from a different kind of cultural look instead of just the history of it.
And like pictures of guys who have won.
This guy was world champion, then that guy, then this one. Yeah.
You're moving beyond that, saying there is so much more to this where chess permeates everyday life.
Yeah. So also the Singfields, who are wonderful funders of a lot of our programming, their interests are varied as well. And so they love music and they love art and, you know, photography and paintings and things like that. So it's nice to kind of mix all of that together. Plus, we thought if it's a static institution and it's only centered on chess, if you come down once, do you need to keep coming back?
Right.
Or we wanted to open it up to a variety of different kinds of audiences.
Right.
So we have three galleries. We always do an art show. We always do a general interest show. And we always do a chess history show. So to go back to Michael Drummond.
Yeah.
Michael's worked with us a couple of times. This is the third time he's exhibited with us, but this is a solo show. And he was on season 8 of Project Runway, and he's a St. Louis native. And I did a show a couple years ago that I commissioned 20 local artists to, out of the blue, kind of just come up with something that within the style of their art that has to do with chess. And some of them, like Tony was saying, didn't consider themselves chess players or had played chess with their grandma when they were 8 and, you know, not since. And some of them were brand new to the game. And that show was remarkable. It was so special. They came up with some really intense and creative works, and the public loved it. And so that inspired me to do solo shows or other local shows, because I just love, you know, these St. Louis art scenes and giving these artists a chance to exhibit. We worked with Peter Mannion a couple years ago, and then I approached Michael Drummond, and he really created a dynamic exhibition. So he's looking at chess and the fashion industry and climate change and how much of an impact the fashion industry has on the climate. And it's a very polluting industry. If you're ever interested, look into like what it takes to make cotton and, you know, dye runoff and all of our polyester clothes that we buy at certain big stores.
Like fast fashion.
Fast fashion
is doing, this disposable fashion society, is unsustainable both for the environment and often for the workers involved in the industry.
Absolutely. Yeah, in other countries where they're not taking care of the workers. So he was inspired. He wanted to pick a game where there was an underdog, and so he picked the famous scene in Stanley Kubrick's 2001 Space Odyssey.
Yes.
And he based the whole show, each piece is a move that Hal made against Bull. And
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like the most iconic pop culture and the most avant-garde fashion and the game of chess and climate change and environmental consciousness all wrapped into one profound and at sometimes very dark exhibit.
Mm-hmm. And so he took a lot of the materials that he used were kind of bulk pieces that were going to be thrown away. So there's an exquisite dress that's made out of bra underwires.
I'm holding the book in my hand right now, you guys. There's this beautiful book, Being Played, which is the name of Michael Drummond's exhibit. And it has these incredible photos of the pieces, the dresses, the shoes that he'd made. And this dress is sharp. It looks like shrapnel and shards of metal, but it's underwire from bras.
It would have gone to a landfill.
Wow.
And then other dresses, it's hard to see unless you get up close and you actually know, are also made out of like the elastic from your bras.
Yeah.
And he weaves them and creates these incredible works of art. And again, those would have all ended up in the landfill. So it's a show that you can walk in and you can think like, wow, I love fashion and this is impressive. If you really care about some of those issues he's talking about, you know, you go down that level. If you love, you know, Stanley Kubrick, you can see some Kubrickian themes, you know, kind of permeating with that. But
and that was what's so surprising, because you can not know anything about chess, not be interested in chess, and go to the Chess Hall of Fame to see this exhibit. And I would say, if you've been to New York and you've been to the Museum of Modern Art, you're going to love this exhibit. I mean, this
Absolutely.
Is something that would be in MoMA.
Oh, totally. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, you know, we kind of talk about that, like you were saying, like you do not have to be a chess player to come down to the World Chess Hall of Fame. You know, I always try to be careful because I know that art can be intimidating, chess can be intimidating, and then I'm trying to mix them both together. And so I try to make it seem where if you are a chess enthusiast or you are a grandmaster, you are not going to be bored by our exhibits, even ones with a lot of the game in the exhibits.
Yeah.
But if you're an art person or you're sitting at Starbucks and you want to just come in and see that you have an opportunity to learn something, but not feel like you're left out.
Right. And I would say, too, to your point about art can feel intimidating and so can chess, so many people are talking about climate change right now.
Yes.
And I know your exhibits change, but, you know, this, you'll have several months of this exhibit being played by Michael Drummond. And so if you're a high schooler and you're not an art museum fan, or you don't play chess, but you're concerned about climate change, this interpretation of climate change would be of interest to you. So most people can relate on some level to your exhibits.
Yes.
And speaking of relatable, you have an exhibit entitled A Beautiful Game, and there are references to chess in pop culture, in advertisements, in newspaper headlines. What else might one find at that exhibit?
So that show is... it's got a lot of material in it. And it was basically inspired by, we were collecting some of these little perfume bottles by a woman named Mary Chess, who wasn't a chess player, but her last name is Chess. And she liked to create these like toiletries in these ornate, gorgeous little glass chess vials.
Huh.
And we had a lot of them. And I started thinking like, well, there's also, we've got, you know, a lot of chess beauty things. We have some fashion pieces that are in our permanent collection. There are other fashion people out there creating games. We just have some beautiful, beautiful chess sets that are gorgeous. And then chess has something. It's not as prevalent anymore, but they give these things called brilliancy prizes.
Mm-hmm.
And they are awards not necessarily for the best played game, but what they consider to be a beautiful game. And so that's where we kind of mixed it in. So we've got these beautiful chess sets that have the have an actual historical game that was given a brilliancy prize. So there we're like mixing the pop culture with the game. And it's not just female beauty. Like we bring in Magnus Carlsen in some of his ads that he did. He was a model for G-Star Raw.
That's right. Denim company, jean company.
Yeah, because he's very GQ. And you see that in the Magnus documentary as well. He's this incredible prodigy, you know, could play 60 chess games blindfolded, but also very GQ on his covers.
Yes, chess is getting really hip and cool amongst like the 20s and 30-year-olds. And it's a very different kind of vibe when you see these people on campus. They're very well-dressed and kind of beautiful.
Yeah. If you like the St. Louis Symphony, you'll want to stay tuned because, yes, you can hear the St. Louis Symphony at the World Chess Hall of Fame. And also, did you know the Queen wasn't always the most powerful piece on the board? That's coming up next on Profiles.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Back with Shannon Bailey and Tony Rich. They represent the World Chess Hall of Fame and the St. Louis Chess Club. We were talking about some of the pieces, Shannon, that you've curated for the Hall of Fame, including the Mary Chess perfume collection, these incredibly intricate, fancy vials of perfume. How do you go about finding items for the Chess Hall of Fame? Because one of the items I know is a showstopper is a video of Bobby Fischer on the Johnny Carson show, The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. You can't just go on YouTube and watch that.
No, they're pretty strict with their rights. CBS is, So when the Hall of Fame moved from Miami, it came with a collection. But we've been growing that collection. I can't even estimate probably 15, 20 times larger than it was when it came here.
Wow.
And so we get great donations from people. We get like really sweet donations. Like this was my grandfather's chess set and he passed away, like a single thing. Or my husband passed away and I have 40 books of chess books that he had and they'll donate them to us. And then it's so funny and people always laugh, but like we're always on eBay.
Yeah.
There's amazing chess stuff on eBay. And and then there's like some auctions. But what we'll do is, you know, every once in a while, if we see something and we think like that is filling a hole in the collection, or like, for example, there's an upcoming poster exhibition, and we've got, you know, some fun like movie posters that deal with chess, but then these incredible, incredible tournament posters from all over the world, and we're going to do bilingual labels with them too, and kind of reach out on a different level with that. So we had some great posters, and then you put in a Google alert for like chess posters, and all of a sudden an eBay alert. And it's really fun to collect those. So we are always looking for things for the collection that are either specific to one exhibition or an exhibition we think we might be able to do in the future.
I was going to say, one of the things I like most about the World Chess Hall of Fame's permanent collection is, yes, they do focus on chess and, whether that's chess and advertising, chess and cosmetics, chess and fashion. But they also focus on the hardcore chess aspect. And like you said, us chess dorks really enjoy seeing things like the original score sheet from one of the first world championship matches that has been played.
Yeah.
Or, you know, watching, you know, the footage, like you mentioned, of Bobby Fischer on Johnny Carson. You know, those insights into the minds of the great chess players and into those moments and times, it almost takes you back when the Hall of Fame has an exhibit that displays these things, because they do such an amazing job of curating it and telling a story. And it's not just, you look at a chess set and think, wow, that's a pretty little chess set. But it's the whole story around it. This chess set was made from a tree on Thomas Jefferson's property.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, those kinds of things. So you really get the full story and the full history of it.
And one of my favorites, and I don't know if this is part of the permanent collection, but you guys had Yoko Ono's all-white chess set.
Yes.
And the story behind that is cool, not only because, my goodness, it's Yoko Ono, but all of the pieces are white. Both sides are white. And she did this during a time, or made this, had this chess set made during a time where the world was broken apart by war. And the players playing with all-white pieces have to trust each other as they move forward in the game. Now, whether or not that's practical, I don't know, but the idea of it was quite a statement.
She created the first round of those chess sets in 1966.
Wow.
So exactly what you're talking about with that time period. And then in the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s, she started creating more of them. That Yoko Ono piece is in Rex's chess collection.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we exhibit it at the Hall of Fame and other locations as often as we can. But like you were saying, the piece is called Play It by Trust. And what's most interesting about the game is that white moves first, that, like when you play a regular game.
Yeah.
So
who moves first?
Whose piece is that? And so she took a game about war during a period of about war and tried to turn it into a peaceful game.
Wow. Almost a cooperation, really.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
I've seen grandmasters playing on this chess set, and they get kind of deep into the game, and at some point one of them looks up and says, wait, that's my bishop. That's not your bishop. And instead of, you know, having an argument or a fight about it, they'll actually discuss it. Don't you remember I played this bishop maneuver where my bishop did this and you did that and I did this? Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay, that's your piece. So this, it does build trust in a way.
Yeah, and it's somewhat subversive making that board. And another culturally subversive move has to do with the history of the power of the queen piece.
The game has basically not changed in 1500 years, but the biggest change was the queen. So the queen used to be a vizier, so a male piece, and it had a limited range of moves. And then it's really fascinating. There's a great book called The Birth of the Chess Queen that is a very easy read, and not, again, you don't have to be a chess expert to read it and understand it. But it was during the reign of the powerful queens, you know, Queen Elizabeth and Queen Victoria and all the queens in Europe, where the game started to change, and it was just kind of speed up the game a little bit.
That's right. You know, the game of chess started in India or somewhere thereabouts more than 1,500 years ago, and followed the Silk Road and followed through the Crusades into Europe. And as Shannon mentioned, European culture had a much, still not great, but a much higher level of women in society.
Right.
And so because of that, the queen did gain more powers, and it was Catherine the Great and Queen Victoria and all of these who I think really caused that last change in the game of chess. Prior to that, you know, bishops and knights and rooks were pretty much established. Those pieces moved the way that they did, and pawns and the king. So prior to the game coming into Europe, the queen would only go two squares at a time in any direction. And now the queen can go as many squares as possible, you know, in any direction. So it's really interesting to see the cultural ties with the game, too, like this.
Absolutely. Well, and one of the biggest cultural moments in the world and for the United States was the Apollo 11 moon landing. And you guys are having an exhibit for several months. Again, these exhibits last a while at the Chess Hall of Fame. Honoring chess in space.
It's called Ground Control.
I love it.
Journey through chess in space. And it is, again, an exhibition for chess lovers and anybody who isn't.
And who doesn't love Apollo 11
space? For one thing, you know, like you said, we're celebrating that anniversary. We've got all of the Apollo videos are on the wall. NASA lets you use all of that stuff for free.
Wow.
So we got some great photographs from them, the actual moon landing videos. When we first opened, one of the very first pieces in our permanent collection that got added when we opened up in 2011 was a chess board, a vinyl chess board, that had been signed by the 2010 U.S. Championship and Women's Championship team that we sent to space. So it went on the very last endeavor, the very last launch that the United States did, with an astronaut named Greg Chamatoff. So Greg brought that back, gave it to us. We had it framed, and that's in this show. And Greg was there also. You want to talk about the BSA, too? And then I can go back and talk about some of the other stuff.
Sure, absolutely. So one of the great ties, I think, between chess and science, chess and space, and bringing in students is that the Scouts, Boy Scouts of America, it used to be called, now it's Scouts BSA, introduced the Chess Merit Badge. When was that?
2011.
In 2011, you know, one of our founders, Jeannie Sinkfield, had a very instrumental role in that. She's been involved with the Scouts for a long, long time. And, you know, whenever the Chess Merit Badge was introduced, one of the requirements was that students had to know how to play chess, learn how to play chess. They had to teach somebody else how to play chess. And in this case, they had to teach three people how to play. And on top of that, they had to be, you know, all of the normal Boy Scout requirements. So, you know, it's great that today now we have more than 250,000 Scouts who have earned that chess merit badge. And the very first kickoff for it was here in St. Louis whenever Greg was standing up there and he was signing autographs for the kids and he was playing chess against them. And we had a live human chess match on a giant board in the middle of the street. And all the Scouts were the chess pieces. And we had a couple of grandmasters that were the players that moved the pawns and pieces around. It was really a lot of fun.
Oh, my gosh. So you have Boy Scouts playing chess with an astronaut.
That's right.
Yes. And if you do have a chance to come down and see the show. In our brochure, Greg was a contributor, and he talks about how he was playing chess in space, and he would play against students on Earth and doing these Earth versus space games, and that how he tried to do magnets, but then NASA was like, you can't take magnets, you're going to mess up the system. And so he Velcroed them all to a board.
Yeah, the engineering of it alone.
Oh,
again,
gosh,
this is my dork side coming out, but it's really fascinating.
Yeah, so it's a really neat story. He was a really neat guy. We hope to maybe have him come back to St. Louis with us. But more into that show. So we have that kind of level of artifacts, but then we have like some sci-fi stuff. So if you're a Star Wars fan, we've got these awesome Star Wars chess sets. Star Trek, like the tridimensional ones. We've got Jetsons and other kind of space age. So we're not just looking at Apollo 11, but we're looking at different areas of space and how it kind of goes out.
Science and sci-fi.
Yes. And we did this really important timeline of everything that happened in chess in 1969 to kind of, again, pull it all together.
I love it. Well, we're going to get to the St. Louis Symphony because I mentioned that. And how can you see the symphony at the Chess Hall of Fame? And also, I want to talk about chess in the schools because you guys have a great outreach program and how chess can benefit students. All that's coming up next.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
We're talking all things chess with Shannon Bailey, World Chess Hall of Fame Chief Curator, and Tony Rich, the St. Louis Chess Club Executive Director. Time is flying by, but I want to hear about the St. Louis Symphony and the Chess Hall of Fame. How can I hear the symphony at the Chess Club?
So we have two big music programs. One is the Composer Series, which is with the Symphony. And so we have our music director is Bjorn Ranheim from the Symphony. And so he kind of curates these concerts with one composer that you get to listen to. And those are Thursday nights. We do those one time a month. And then our monthly music series is regional musicians. So one time it will be opera, one time it'll be bluegrass, another time it'll be jazz.
Really cool.
So we sell them out. So if you are interested, get your tickets well in advance because they sell out every single time.
And how much are they?
They're $20, but if you're a member, it's $10. But that gets you heavy hors d'oeuvres, the concert, and a drink ticket.
That's cheaper than movie.
Yeah,
than
right.
going to a movie.
Yeah.
Very
and
nice.
Way more fun.
Way cooler.
That's right.
Way more fun. Well, Ed, speaking of fun, there is a Scholastic Chess Initiative through the St. Louis Chess Club, which brings chess into schools.
That's right. And really, that's the chess club's bread and butter.
Mm.
You know, whenever we started back in 2008, the chess club's mission was to introduce the game of chess to students. And if we make grandmasters out of them and they all become, you know, chess nuts like me, that's great. But that's really not the goal. The ultimate goal is to help them become better learners. Chess is one of these great tools that teach you things like spatial awareness, cause and effect, realizing that your actions now can impact your game later on. Or, you know, one impetuous, rash move late in the game can ruin all of those great moves that you made leading up to that point, too. So the game of chess really is this great educational tool. We've noticed that kids who participate in chess have better standardized test scores, better grade reports, their behavioral reports are better, and attendance is better.
Wow.
On top of that, there are a lot of there's a lot of anecdotal evidence and even this pre and post test kind of thing where we ask the students, do you think of yourself as a smart kid? Do you think you can tackle challenging problems? Do you enjoy going to school? And in the beginning, before chess, you know, it's kind of a not so great picture that they paint. You know, I'm not smart. Chess is hard. School is hard. I can't tackle tough problems. And then after chess, overwhelmingly, these students say, you know what, maybe I can. I learned how to play chess and I thought I couldn't do that. This was so hard. Maybe I'm smarter than I think. Maybe I can, you know, go on and go to college and get a great degree and a great career. So, you know, the chess club since, you know, over the past 10 years has been teaching in the schools. Right now we have about 100 schools in the St. Louis area that we serve. More than 55,000 students have learned chess since the club opened. So I'm really proud of that number. One of the newer initiatives that the club is doing now as it relates to chess in schools is we've partnered with different police departments around the area, St. Louis Police Department, the Jennings Police Department, and so on. And we're bringing uniformed officers into the classroom to teach chess.
And wow.
I can tell you that the uniformed officers are more intimidated by these students probably than anything they face in their normal day-to-day lives. You know, the kids will ask tough questions, you know, why is this the best move? Why is this the best opening? How did you play like that? Why can't I do something like this? You know, and I think the officers sometimes get a little intimidated about that. But one of the great things is that it helps students see these officers in a different light as their mentors, as their peers, as their guides, you know, in life, as opposed to this authoritarian figure. So it really has been an amazing, transformative thing to watch, these instructors, these officers going in and teaching chess to all these young students.
Wow. So it's not just learning a game. You are building the personhood of each student because they are learning confidence. As you mentioned, cause and effect. I didn't even think about that and how you can translate those skills into life. And then, of course, there are the awesome chess cops.
That's right.
That's awesome.
And you shake hands before the game begins and you shake hands after the game ends and you learn to be a gracious winner or you learn how not to be a sore loser if you happen to lose the game too. So, yeah, I mean, you know, like I said in the beginning, if we make grandmasters out of all of these students, that's a wonderful thing. I would be very happy if they all stuck with chess the rest of their lives. But I'm convinced that what we're doing in the classroom today will make lasting impressions and a big impact on their lives, whether they play chess or not.
Wow. Well, now the St. Louis Chess Club also hosts tournaments, and you host tournaments from, I'm assuming, beginner tournaments all the way through world-class tournaments with professional grandmasters.
Absolutely. The whole gamut. You know, we start with scholastic chess tournaments. So these kids that are in these programs have the opportunity to compete if they want to. They can show up to different schools in the St. Louis area. Sometimes we have them at St. Louis public school district schools. Sometimes they're at St. Louis University. But we try to move them around the St. Louis area so that everyone has a chance to come play. Those tournaments are a great opportunity. If you've never, ever played a tournament before, they can come in. They learn how the pieces move, learn how the clocks work, learn how a scoring system works in chess and so on. But like you said, all the way up through tournaments at the club, we have weekly and monthly tournaments for kids and adults, whether you're a club-level player or stronger. We move up to our national events. We host the five national championships that are the U.S. Championship, the U.S. Women's, the Junior, the Girls, and the U.S. Senior Championship. Mm. And in addition to that, we host major international events, tournaments like the St. Louis Rapid and Blitz, which is chess at a very fast time control. It's very fun and very exciting to watch. Or the Sinkfield Cup, a classical chess tournament featuring the best 10 players in the world, including the current world champion, Magnus Carlsen.
So if I'm listening today and I am interested in playing chess and I don't know how, and really that's me, as much as we've talked about chess, I don't know how to play. What's my next step? How do I get involved?
So you can always go to stlouischessclub.org. There are a ton of resources there. You can learn about the classes that we have at the club. If you just want to come in and enjoy the casual side of chess and enjoy being a member, but not really any tournaments or lectures, you can do that as well. We have ladies' night classes. That's on Thursday nights. Those could be a great opportunity also to come and socialize and enjoy the game of chess in a non-competitive, non-stressful way. It's really a lot of fun.
So could I go to that one not knowing how to play?
Absolutely.
Okay, just show up.
Absolutely. You know what? A lot of our classes really are for the rank beginners. You don't even know what the pieces are called.
Yeah.
You don't know how to set up the board. You don't know what they're named. That's great. Come on in, stop by the club, and before you leave, you'll call yourself a chess player.
I love it. There is something for everybody at the World Chess Hall of Fame and the St. Louis Chess Club, whether you are into high fashion or concerned about climate change or a total space geek and love Star Trek and Star Wars and the Apollo missions, or you're like me and you just want to learn how to play. Shannon and Tony, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Profiles. If you missed any of this episode or want to hear other profiles, go to KMOX.com and click On Demand.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.